John chapter 20. I'd like us to begin by reading the first 8 verses of John chapter 20. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark and saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. So she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So Peter and the other disciple went forth, and they were going to the tomb. The two were running together, and the other disciple ran faster than Peter and came to the tomb first. And stooping and looking in, he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. And so Simon Peter also came, following him, and entered the tomb, and he saw the linen wrappings lying there, and the face cloth, which had been on his head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. So the other disciple who had first come to the tomb then also entered. He saw and believed. Today we begin the end of a year-long journey. As we began this year, we focused on something to believe in. As we did so, we had a number of series that we focused on as we journeyed throughout the year. We analyzed Acts, and in the early chapters of the book of Acts, we looked at people coming to faith. And as they found faith, we saw how it transformed their lives, and they would never be the same again. Willing to give up homes, lives, families, everything for this newfound faith. We then look at belief in a baby. As we focused on the birth of Christ, we looked at people surrounding Christ coming to faith. And we saw that faith came in different ways. We saw reluctant faith. We saw innocent faith. We saw faith coming in all shapes and sizes. Some who had grown up studying Scripture. Sometimes we saw a young teenage girl having to trust and believe that God was going to perform a miracle in her life. Sometimes it was shepherds in the fields. Those who were the outcasts, the unknown of society coming to faith. And we saw that in each of them, maybe we could find ourselves. That each of us take different paths to faith, just as the people surrounding the birth of Jesus took different paths to finding Jesus Christ. We then talked about how faith worships, and we especially focused on corporate and collective worship and what faith does to express its praise and joy to God. We then talked about what faith is. We talked about, for example, things like faith in facts. That there are certain things that we need to believe in order to come in to a relationship with Jesus Christ. We talked about faith in the future, and that real faith, though, must look beyond the facts. That our faith is not based on an absence of fact and an absence of truth, but we realize that we don't see everything and we don't know everything, and we cannot with our physical eyes see the unseen realm where God dwells. And so faith has to go beyond the facts to the future and to the unseen. And then at the end of the year, we began a study that's now in its 5th week and coming to a conclusion on a week of wonders. Our young people are looking at the Gospel of John as they're preparing for Lads to Leaders Convention that'll be this spring. And so we decided that we would look at the Gospel of John and look at a week of wonders and not look at all of the events, but some of the highlights of that last week leading up to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Why finish a year talking about something to believe in, talking about the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus? Because if this week does not happen, then none of the sermons that we've preached in the course of this year matter. None of them have any power. They are wasted breath and for you, wasted time. Those people wasted their time transforming their lives in the book of Acts. And no matter what path they took to faith in Jesus around the birth of Christ, it's meaningless if there is no death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. And so as we looked at a week of wonders, We started with King for a Day back in John chapter 12. And how the people proclaimed Him as their King and their Messiah. But that wasn't the kind of King He came to be. In fact, He would confirm that later in chapter 18 when He stood before Pilate and said, "My kingdom is not of this world." And though they were ready to make Him their king, to reign on the throne in Jerusalem and to overthrow the Romans and give the Jews preeminence over the face of the earth, He pushed aside that throne and that crown because that's not why He came. We then talked about His arrest in the garden and whom do you seek? And we asked ourselves that question. Whom do we seek? Whom are we after? What is our life all about? And remember, John remembered something about that evening that the other writers didn't talk about. He remembers that he was defended and his life was saved by the Jesus who said, "Whom do you seek? I am He. Leave these men alone." We then talked about injustice and the trial of Jesus. And for Jesus, it was just us. It was not about Himself and His justice. It was just about us and what we needed and helping us to avoid the justice of God and know only the mercy of God by His facing the justice of God. We then talked about the cross. Behold your King. And the theme throughout the trial and the early stages of the crucifixion is that Jesus is King of the Jews. And we talked about that He died as King of the Jews. But He reigns as King of kings and Lord of lords for all humanity. And now we prepare for the conclusion. Last time we were together, it was a period of darkness. Jesus was hanging lifeless upon the cross, a spear mark in His side, wounds in His hands and His feet and His back and His head. It was a time of darkness and despair. But even in times of darkness and despair, amazing things can happen. And so as we look at the end of John chapter 19, we see courageous men stepping forth. In the Jewish culture, the burial was important. You honored a fellow Jew, and you honored them by burying them. You didn't want to leave a fellow Jew unburied. The burial rites were very, very significant in this culture. And it's interesting as you look at what happens in the aftermath of the cross. It's interesting that the apostles, for the most part, who had been the closest followers of Jesus and the most open followers of Jesus, forsook Him and fled and hid and watched at a distance. But then some previously hidden disciples, like Joseph, a member of the council who had not agreed with the crucifixion of Jesus, who had previously been a disciple in secret, decided to make a stand. Nicodemus, who had previously come to Him by night, does in this night of the death of Jesus step forward. And so it's ironic that those who should have stepped forward faded into the shadows, and that those who had faded into the shadows suddenly step forward. Joseph summoned up the courage and stepped forward to Pilate and said, "I'll take the body." And so Jesus was buried in a garden among the wealthy in a new hewn tomb. And so it was that Nicodemus brought spices. It was not unusual to put spices upon the body. And it's interesting that among the spices you found myrrh. Do you remember the gifts given to Mary and Joseph when Jesus came to the world? Now think of those gifts again. Myrrh came when He was born, and myrrh came when He was buried. And they put the spices upon His body. It was not unusual to do that. They would wrap the body with strips of cloth, much like a mummy. And they probably learned to some degree their burial practices from their time in Egypt, though they did not remove the insides as the Egyptians did. But they would wrap the body and often put spices in the folds of the cloth. It was not unusual to put spices there, but a 75 pounds worth was absolutely unheard of unless you are burying a king or someone of royalty or some great dignitary. He died on the cross as the King of the Jews, and he was buried with the honor of a king. But it's still dark. He's still dead. As you think of the darkness of that hour, I want you to think about yesterday. Yesterday we celebrated Christmas, and I remember when I was a young boy, we couldn't wait till the morning. In our family, for the most part, it was designated that the sun had to be peeking over the horizon before you could wake up mom and dad. I don't know what your family plan is. As we got older, we just decided, let's do it the night before, we can sleep in the next day. But my parents hadn't figured that out yet. And so I can remember watching for the dawn. And we couldn't wait to get up as early as possible. You know, you think of all of those mornings you couldn't get your children out of bed to go to school. If you had a pry bar, you couldn't get them out of that bed. But on Christmas morning, it was different. We would arise early in the morning to go see our presents. And so it was early on a Sunday morning. Some women roused early from sleep in the hours just before dawn to see the greatest gift humanity has ever received, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I want us to talk, for the few moments we have left, about the joy that came in the morning. I want us to see the brightness of the dawn against the darkness of what preceded it. I want us to see the hope in contrast to the despair that they had known as they stood at the foot of that cross. And I want us to realize, as we think of joy in the morning, that dawn follows dark. This is the most significant moment in human history. I want us to realize, as the world thinks about the birth of Jesus, I'm always happy when people think about Jesus. But I want us to realize that that birth is meaningless if there is no dawn. If this dawn does not happen, that birth is meaningless. If this dawn does not happen, all His miracles are powerless. If this dawn does not happen, not only are the sermons of Jesus invitationless, but all the sermons that have been preached since then are invitationless. I want you to think about all those sermons that are preached through the book of Acts. Every sermon, basically throughout the book of Acts, talks about the resurrection of Jesus. In Acts chapter 17, he says it's the resurrection of Jesus that is God's proof to the world that He will judge the world one day by a man. That man being Jesus Christ. In 1 Corinthians 15, it is the resurrection of Jesus that gives us proof and hope of our resurrection. Our sermons have no invitation. They are just storytelling conventions if this dawn does not happen. The cross is worthless and pointless pain if there is no dawn and joy in the morning. And the tomb is the end of a tragic story. It's not something meaningful and motivational. It's the end. He's defeated. It doesn't matter how much good He did, how many great things He taught about how to help people and be kind to people. If He stays in that tomb, it is nothing more than a tragic story with no hope for us. If you go back to the book of Psalm, chapter 30, it says in verse 4, "Sing praise to the Lord, you His godly ones, and give thanks to His holy name. For His anger is but for a moment, His favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may last for the night, but a shout of joy comes in the morning. On the cross, we saw the anger of the Lord as Jesus endured the justice and the punishment we should have. But the psalmist said, the anger of the Lord is but for a season, and joy comes in the morning. In John chapter 16, Jesus said joy was coming. He says the world will rejoice, and you can think of the religious leaders as they gloated at the foot of the cross, as they mocked and spat upon Jesus. And then think about the reality of Jesus saying they will rejoice, they will have their time, the devil will have his day. But your sorrow will be turned to joy. What you find in John chapter 20 is the reality of Psalm chapter 30. And the reality and the fulfillment of the promise made by Jesus in John chapter 16. Sorrow was turned to joy. And joy did come in the morning. I want us to look at John chapter 20. I want us to make just a few highlights as we focus on John chapter 20. In John chapter 20, and beginning in verse 1, it says that Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. As Mary comes to the tomb, we're reminded that when we look at the other gospel accounts, that there were more women who came to the tomb. We were introduced to many of those women this past Sunday night. And we talked about, for example, Mary of Magdala and Salome, the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And we talked about Mary, the mother of James and Joseph. And if we look at the other gospel accounts, basically these same women, and maybe a few others, came to the tomb early on that morning. While John focuses on just one of those women, he does let us know that the others were present. For example, when Mary goes and speaks to the apostles and says that they have taken away Jesus, she says, "We cannot find Him." Now later, when she's by herself and talking to the angels and then to Jesus, she's going to say, "And I cannot find Him." But in this early account, when she first reports the fact that the tomb is empty to the apostles, she's letting them know, "There are other women with me. I just happen to be the spokesperson." As we think about those other women who came to the tomb, we can look at the other gospel accounts and find out that there were certain things that John does not bring out for us. The other women saw the angels. The other women seem to have seen Jesus. I think I've got Saul up there, but they seem to have seen Jesus as well. They were apparently, in the beginning, Mark chapter 16 says, afraid to tell anyone, or at least to tell anyone other than the apostles. You can look at Matthew 28, Mark 16, and Luke 24 for the other gospel accounts of what we find in John. It seems to me that what John does is he focuses on one of the women. The woman likely who saw Jesus first. And it's interesting and fascinating as we think about what we talked about last Sunday night, that he continues this emphasis on the role of the women in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. It was the women who stood close to the cross. It was the women who marked His burial place. His apostles didn't bury Him. It was two members of the council that sentenced Him to death that had to bury Him. But the women watched where He was buried. It was the women who first came to the tomb in the early hours of that Sunday morning. And it was a woman, not one of the apostles, who first saw the resurrected Lord. And so what John does is he talks about that woman. But he also talks about his personal coming to faith. John gives us intimate details, especially of the priesthood, and especially of his own encounters with Christ. And starting in verse 3, he talks about how he came to believe. In the section we look at today, he talks about how he came to believe that the tomb was empty. Later on tonight, we'll talk about how he came to believe that Jesus was resurrected. It seems to have come in stages for the apostles. They believed that the tomb was empty before they believed that He had come back to life. In fact, in the text of John chapter 20, it's going to say they did not yet understand that He must be resurrected. And so it was that John says that Mary came to Peter and to I, calling himself the disciple whom Jesus loved, and they ran to the tomb. You almost can imagine a little bit of pride when John says, "And I got there first. I run faster than Peter does." But when I got to the tomb, I looked inside, but I wasn't willing to go inside. I saw the linen wrappings, but I didn't go in. And Peter, consistent with his personality, he dives in and then thinks about it later. Says things and then wonders if he should after a while. And so he rushes into the tomb. And they see the linen wrappings in the tomb. And they see the face cloth neatly folded up. And it's interesting, as you look at the scene, it doesn't look like the scene of a grave robbery. For example, if you're trying to rob a grave that we know from the other accounts is guarded by soldiers who are under threat of death if they fall asleep or allow the body to be removed, the tomb is sealed with the seal of the governor of Rome, and so it would be threat of death to break that seal and open the tomb. You would think if somebody was going to rob that grave, you wouldn't think that they would take the time to unwrap the body and neatly fold up the face cloth. It doesn't look at all like somebody's in a hurry. Some authors have pointed out that they often used a resin on the wrappings. It's unclear whether they did that with Jesus. The text doesn't tell us specifically. And it's possible they may not have because they would have been in a pretty big hurry to bury Him before sundown, which would be the beginning of the Passover Sabbath. But if they did use that resin, what would happen is the wrappings would take on the shape of the body. And there are those who believe, and it is possible, though we cannot know in this life, it is possible that Jesus passed through the wrappings, and when they saw the wrappings lying there in the tomb, it still had the shape of Jesus' body. But the point is that this doesn't look like a grave robbery. This doesn't look like somebody in haste trying to remove a body. It looks like somebody waking up, making their bed, putting aside their face cloth, and simply walking out of a tomb. It looks a lot like a resurrected Lord. And what John remembers is, says, when I looked, you look at the other gospel accounts, when they were first told by Mary that the tomb is empty, it was nonsense to them, the text says. But when Peter and John saw the empty tomb and they saw the wrappings, John believed. Now the next verse says he didn't yet understand that it was a resurrection, but they believed what Mary told them. They believed that the tomb was empty. And then he focuses attention on Mary of Magdala. Magdala was also a village known as Magadan, which was on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. It means tower, and you would have certain watchtowers scattered across the countryside. And so it's a city that means tower. And the apostles went there, according to Matthew 15, after the feeding of the 5,000. That's where Mary is from. As we think about Mary and we think about what she experienced, we can look back in Luke chapter 8 and find that 7 demons were cast out of her. I want you to think about the Gadarene demonic who had all those demons cast out of him. And I want you to think about how he lived. Do you remember? He lived in the tombs. He ran about naked. He cut himself. They tried to chain him and he broke the chains. I want you to think about the kind of person Mary was before the demons were cast out. I want you to think about the kind of life that she lived. The transformation that took place in her life because of Jesus. When you understand that He gave her life back, both physical life and spiritual life. She was an outcast, a woman who was viewed as crazy and out of control and filled with a demon because she was evil. That's how they viewed her in her society. Jesus gave her everything back. And so out of gratitude when the apostles ran, she stood by the cross. Out of gratitude when the apostles could not be found, she stood there by the tomb. And out of gratitude, she arose in the early hours of that Sunday morning. And apparently Peter and John had already left the tomb, and she arrived and stood outside the tomb and wept. She mourned and wailed. I can imagine the tenderness of the angels as she looks in the tomb and sees an angel, two angels in the tomb. And I can imagine the gentleness in their voices as they say, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Maybe their question was asked with the tenderness of genuine concern. Maybe it was a question of surprise. "Why are you weeping today? This is not a day for weeping. The time for weeping is past. The cross is behind us. This is a time for rejoicing. The tomb is empty. He is risen. He is not here." The text says she then turned her head. Did she hear a noise behind her? Some think that in response to her comment, someone has taken the body and we don't know where he is. That maybe the angels had motioned to Jesus, or maybe they had bowed to Jesus or pointed to Jesus. But for whatever the reason, she turns and looks and sees Jesus, but she doesn't recognize Him. Then we know Jesus was in human form because she thought He was the gardener. We know also He took on human form after the resurrection because in chapter 21, we're going to find Him eating with the apostles. But there seems to have been something different. Because when the two disciples saw Him on the road to Emmaus, they did not first recognize Him. And here Mary doesn't first recognize Him. Maybe just prevented by God. Maybe we need to remember that it's in the early hours of the morning. She's been weeping and crying, and the last thing she expected to see was Jesus up walking and talking. She expected to try to find a body, a corpse, not a person. And so Jesus is one she thinks is the gardener. Who else would be here in the early hours of a Sunday morning? And so Jesus asks, "Woman, why are you weeping? They have taken my Lord, and I don't know where they've put Him." I want you to hear the tremble in her voice. I want you to see the tears on her cheeks. As the one who changed her life is not only dead, but they have desecrated His grave and have stolen His body. And she is the perfect epitome of absolute heartbreak. "They've taken my Lord." And then Jesus says one word. "Mary?" Think of the other times when He said, "Mary." Maybe He said, "Mary, it's time to leave. Mary, live a life without the demons. Mary, would you like some bread?" As He passes it around at a meal. She had heard Jesus say Mary before. And when Jesus said Mary, she said Rabboni. Which doesn't mean rabbi. It means my rabbi. My teacher. And so Jesus says, I know some translations say, "Touch me not." It doesn't mean don't touch me. It literally means stop touching me. And so what He's saying is, "Mary, I've not yet ascended to my Father. I'm not leaving. This is not the last time you're going to see me. So you don't have to hang on to me like you're never going to see me again. I have a mission for you to do. I need you to go and tell the apostles what you have seen." Dawn follows dark. Mary had lost her Lord and her Savior. John had lost his best friend. But the dawn changed everything. I think most everybody in Columbia knows Dylan's story. The young man on the Columbia football team who desperately wanted to see his team win a state championship and died of colon cancer the morning of the final game. This past Friday night, ESPN had an extended special on the football team and on Dylan's story. And there was something in particular that stood out. It talked about one of the last conversations that he had with his mother in the hours before he passed. He awoke for a moment and asked a simple question. Did we win? Now the game was still yet hours away, but his mother simply said, "Yes." A few hours later, a mama's response became reality. when in fact they did win. I cannot help but, as I think about that, think about a Jesus who said to the world, "We win. I will be in the belly of the earth as Jonah was in the well 3 days, but we win. They shall destroy this temple of my body, but in 3 days I will resurrect it. We win." Throughout his ministry, that was his message. And then on that morning of joy, that new dawn, everything changed. And because of that, we will win. This morning, have you experienced the resurrection of Jesus Christ? As we dawn upon a new year, today can be the day, like it was for Ben last week, when we dawn on a new hope and a new tomorrow. For Romans chapter 6 says that when we're baptized, we reenact the death, burial, and get this, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, raised to walk in newness of life. For Paul says, if we have died with Him, we believe that we shall also be raised with Him. And what about those of us who are in Christ? Are we still coming to the tomb? Are we like the apostles who forsook Him and fled, and the first time we face troubles, whether it's economic troubles or persecution from somebody at the office, the first time we run into some problems, we run from the cross? Or are we like the women who follow Jesus to cross and to tomb and wherever He leads them? If we will walk with Him in the dark, then we shall also stand with Him in the dawn. If we can help you to know that dawn, then won't you come as we stand and sing?